tough to follow Richard McDowell in a presentation, but now we're going to subsidized agriculture, and it's chickens instead of cows, and much higher phosphorus levels in the soil. I'd like to credit the co-authors here, especially the last one, Dr. Arthur Allen from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. He runs a robust research program down there. And the rest of the co-authors represent collaborators from Agriculture Research Service and University of Maryland College Park. Okay. All right, so we're working on Eastern Shore of Chesapeake Bay there in Maryland. University of Maryland Eastern Shore is in the heart of poultry producing country. And if you look at the soil test values, this fertility index value from the state of Maryland basically equates to the Malic 3 soil test phosphorus value. We've got average values here of 374 down in the region where we're working. And if you're not familiar with Malic 3, 50 is about what's recommended for agronomic optimum. So multiple say 6 to 10 times as much phosphorus as you need for agronomic production. We've worked on the research farm at University of Maryland Eastern Shore on some of these high P soils and grown continuous corn for 10 years, looking at Malic 3 values through the years. We saw some decline up till 2007 without adding any lime. However, the pH got so low we couldn't maintain agronomic production of corn, so we limed in 2008, and values are right back up where we started in terms of Malic 3. So it's going to take, that's a 10-year, so it's going to take a very long time, and of course that's supporting a very high level of dissolved phosphorus in runoff. If you look at the total P loads from drainage ditches, it varies according to the hydrology. In the wet years, we're getting 25 to 30 kilograms per hectare P loss. That's, you know, double what we were seeing there in New Zealand. Dry years, of course, you're just not moving anything because you're not moving any, well, the hydrology's not there. Under a lot of pressure, new TMDLs in the Chesapeake Bay. And the states came out with plans of how they were going to meet TMDLs. And one of the big criticisms that EPA came back with is that there's no or limited commitment to improving phosphorus management to address the high P in soils that's related to excess manure. So that brings us to the use of P-sorbing industrial byproducts. And we've got about a, you know, over 10-year history of working with several of these. But the one that we've settled on is FGD gypsum. That's flue gas desulfurization gypsum, sometimes called synthetic gypsum. It's the product that comes from the coal-fired power plants. They co-fire some limestone in order to liberate some calcium that combines with the sulfur. It strips, stops sulfur emissions from the power plants and produces this gypsum as a byproduct. So this is definitely not laboratory study. Do my research with dump trucks and brought in, decided that basically this was taking the strategy that the last point of concentration or departure of the phosphorus from the farm is in the drainage ditch. So if we could just treat the water at the edge of the farm that's leaving the farm, then we can protect all of the acreage that upstream from the farm. So we built a filter in the ditch, and being research, my dam in the ditch is actually a weir, and so I can measure any overflow. There's a manifold in front, there's 6 tile lines, they're 4-inch diameter, encased in drain sock. And so we put a little bit of gypsum in the bottom of the ditch, laid the lines in, sandwiched them in a sand layer, covered it over with gypsum, approximately 25 centimeters of gypsum, covering the tile lines, and that's looking upstream from the weir, instrumented so that we could get P concentrations upstream of the filter and then in what goes actually through the filter. What happens here then when the water is flowing, what passes through the filter then goes to the tile lines, and this is underground, but it goes around the dam through this metal manhole where we can have a flume down there that's measuring flow rate of what's actually being filtered before it's released back into the ditch, and then we can also measure what is bypassing the filter. We find that the pea removal efficiency is greatest at low flow rates. Of course, this is a precipitation reaction. The solubility of gypsum is maintaining a high level of soluble calcium, and so when we get orthophosphate coming in the drainage water, it's precipitating as calcium phosphate, which is less soluble than the gypsum, and so we're just trapping it as a precipitate in the filter. At high flow rates, pea removal efficiency is down around 40 or 45%. At low flow rates, it's up around 90%. And the mean phosphorus removal efficiency we find to be around 75% removal. And here's just a little chart showing the P values coming in and P values going out. Very effective removal at this part of the hydrograph. But we also find that we're removing arsenic. Now, arsenic is present in these soils because it's an additive to chicken feed, comes out in the litter and is applied to the soil. It's added to control parasites in the chickens. And so we have soluble arsenate coming out in the drainage waters, and we're finding that we can remove soluble arsenate through this same process, behaves the same as phosphate. So just an added benefit. This is the look at one of the first small storms. We constructed this in early April of 2007. The first storm, a little over a half inch of rain, over 30 hours, nice gentle rain, moved about 1 gram of soluble phosphorus. We filtered everything, removed about half of it in that particular event, so things looked very nice. In fact, most of what I'm going to talk about here is flow events, and so I'm kind of underrepresenting the effectiveness of the filter because there is some base flow and there's the tail of the events when we're still doing filtration. But what we get in a major event a few days later, after the soils were all wet, we had over 3 inches of rain in 30 hours and moved over 8 kilograms of soluble phosphorus. That went through the filter, about 2/3 of a kilogram, we removed most of it. So we trapped a half of a kilogram of phosphorus in this one storm event. The disappointing thing is that a lot of it went over the top of the weir, and we lost 7.5 kilograms and moved on down into the Minocan River. Here's kind of a summary of P loads and 17 storm events. So you can see the blue down below. We are removing a considerable amount of soluble phosphorus by the filter, and again, these are just flow events. But we usually lose quite a bit over the top because we just can't filter it fast enough. Another physical limitation that we observed since we've been running this since 2007 and it's still in operation is that the flow rate through the filter, the actual hydraulic conductivity of the gypsum itself, was much higher when we started and was still sort of satisfactory in 2008 and began to really drop off in 2009. So the hypothesis was, well, maybe it's siltation because it basically serves as a sedimentation barrier too. And I'm not even tracking how much particulate phosphorus I'm trapping behind, on top of the filter. But perhaps that's sealing the surface. So we did a little rototilling. We had to clean out the vegetation that grows in the bottom of these ditches, and we rototilled the surface. And subsequent to tillage, it looks like we might have improved the hydraulic conductivity of the filter. We'll continue to monitor this to find out. But even if that is the case, it means that we've got some maintenance involved of the filter. And in terms of maintenance, we also had one event that threatened the integrity of the weir, threatened to wash it out. We were getting some wash around the side. We had to repair that. So there would be some maintenance involved in a structure like this. However, they could still have a place for use in these landscapes. There'll be a presentation. Karen Grubb is going to tell us about the potential beneficial use for spent gypsum. When we decide that this is no longer effective from a chemical means, then it's going to have to be excavated, and what's the potential for applying it back onto the land surface. So Karen will tell us about that at 11. Meanwhile, work was ongoing just looking at basic fate and transport of phosphorus in these soils. When we built the filter, we were operating on the conventional assumption that most of this was phosphorus that was delivered in runoff. However, research showed that when we have precipitation events, these are poorly drained soils, somewhat poorly and poorly. Water tables come up, and most of the gypsum is actually moving laterally to the ditch, and with these very high, very wet soil events, and most of it moving laterally, especially with high P concentrations in the surface horizons. And then only about 10% of it is actually being lost in runoff when you have saturation excess. These are very flat landscapes, and they are coarse textured soils. So it kind of makes sense. So this spawned the second generation of the use of FGD gypsum, and that would be with the gypsum curtain. And the idea would be to go along beside the ditch and excavate a trench and backfill it with FGD gypsum, intercept the groundwater before it reaches the ditch, and you have a flow event, and treat it in place before it gets to the ditch and line both sides. You could even construct a berm and capture that last 10% by forcing it to infiltrate and treat everything. So this is what it looks like in practice. We used a backhoe and a 1 foot wide bucket, and we dug, we could reach about 5 feet, so we went as far as the backhoe would take us. We modified a lime spreader with a chute on the back, took the spinner off, and used that hopper to deliver it into this chute to fill the trench, and we had to back this up over an open trench and in order to fill it, but we got the job done. We packed it down so we could have some trafficability, and then created a little bit of berm and put in some piezometers so we could measure it. And for research purposes, we did 20 meter segments of treated area, and then we left some untreated as control so we could do some comparison in the effectiveness of P removal. That's what our piezometer, nested piezometers look like. We have some very shallow going all the way down to depths that exceed the depth of the gypsum curtain itself. In practice, we would modify our construction technique considerably and go with a trencher. Be much easier and faster to work with a trencher than a backhoe. And then we've identified some equipment. This is a self-propelled side shooter, where the operator can see the belt that's delivering the gypsum out the front of the machine and deliver it to the side and into the trench. That ought to speed up the operation of construction quite a bit. We have recently received in July of this year, I say we, it's Dr. Arthur Allen at University of Maryland Eastern Shore, has received a conservation innovation grant and for $1 million from Natural Resources Conservation Service to take this into practice. And that requires a matching. And so our industry partner is Constellation Energy, and Salil Bose, who was a co-author on this presentation, is our contact person with industry. They have a new power plant that opened in January of 2010 and is generating gypsum in the Baltimore area, and they're looking for a beneficial source for all of that byproduct. So they are donating the gypsum and transporting it to the site for installation. And the goal of this project then is to develop conservation practice standards for gypsum curtains. And then you know, thinking beyond that, try to establish eligibility for cost sharing this practice. And then part of the research would be to evaluate the cost effectiveness. Of course, we expect this to last, you know, several years, so you would spread that out over time, the cost of implementation. We hope to do this if we can get the cooperation of the landowners in the paired watershed area where we've had a study for 2 or 3 years, not a study, but we've been monitoring at the mouth of these two paired watersheds. The one on the north has a couple of poultry operations, and so their soils have received litter for many years. It's ditch-drained agriculture. We'd like to go ahead and line all of the ditches with gypsum here. And then in the southern watershed, this does not have any poultry, so the soil test P levels are much lower, and we'd do a paired watershed study to determine the effectiveness at a catchment scale. So what are the environmental concerns related to FGD gypsum use? It does contain small amounts of arsenic, mercury, and selenium. And so from an environmental standpoint, EPA would look at this as an artificial product, an industrial byproduct. The amounts are only slightly above what you find in natural gypsum, but it does rise to the level of some scrutiny. In fact, I guess there's some current regulations that would require this to go to a class landfill, the toxic waste landfill. That's been proposed. It's still undecided. But arsenic is sequestered by gypsum as calcium arsenate. In fact, I think it occurs in the gypsum as calcium arsenate. And it would take more arsenic out of the system. So arsenic really should not be a problem in the use that we're proposing. We have been monitoring mercury at the drinking water standards, at EPA drinking water standards, and there's no detectable mercury loss at that level in the leachate. And there's other research that shows there's not much cause for leaching of mercury from FGD gypsum. Gypsum has a reaction, undergoes photo-induced reduction, and then volatilizes. But in the case of the gypsum curtain, we'll be burying it, so there's no exposure to light, so we don't expect any volatilization of mercury in this application. We're seeing some selenium in the outflow, but it seems to be at or below drinking water standards. So again, I think we're okay in terms of selenium. And then questions have been asked, well, what's the fate of all this dissolved calcium and sulfate that you're putting into the system? And I've asked myself that question. And all I can come up with is, well, gypsum's a naturally occurring marine deposit, so whatever the natural processes are that cause it to precipitate in the marine environment, I'm assuming that's where it's going to end up, and I cannot think of any other deleterious effects. So what about the cost? I think the goal would be that it's no cost to the producer or the landowner. Constellation Energy has expressed an interest in donating this gypsum. It's produced in such quantities that it vastly overwhelms any other beneficial use. In fact, it is approved for use in making wallboard, and there's technology to do that. So the same levels of arsenic, mercury, and selenium are used in the building materials in our homes. And it's approved for that use. And it does have some market value for that use. Of course, currently with the housing industry, even in a healthy housing industry, the total industry itself, the power generation industry, probably produces twice as much gypsum as could ever be utilized in building. So it's in vast excess. But its value for wallboard is about $15 per ton. We're using a dollar value of about $35 a ton for transportation to where it'll be utilized on site. We use 1 ton of gypsum per linear meter using the trench size that we use. That's a US ton, not a metric ton. And in 10 years, one power plant would produce enough gypsum to line all the ditches in Maryland. And then if they're beginning to fail, we'd go in and do it again. The idea would be to have NRCS cost share the installation, and the cost of that would be determined and hopefully come up with no cost to the producer or landowner. So, in the foreground there, the man on the right is Arthur Allen. He's the $2 million man, and he's ready to answer your questions at the back of the room there. Hello, Art. Thank you. Questions? Rich?
The first one is, what's the pH of the gypsum treated water? And the second one is, you mentioned that it was restricted by water conductivity. With your curtains, how long do you think it's going to be before that restricted by water conductivity is going to compromise the drainage function of the ditch?
Right. Okay, the first question, effect on pH. It's a neutral salt, and so we're not seeing any effect on pH of the dissolution of the gypsum. Second question, I'm thinking there's going to be a difference between the vertical filtration and the siltation that is happening there versus a lateral flow direction, and really no filtration or sedimentation to slow that down. So I don't think it's going to cause a problem and impede. We've already got measurements shortly after installation that shows that the hydraulic conductivity, the lateral hydraulic conductivity is as fast as the soil itself. We're not impeding drainage currently. Whether it will over time, I guess we'll find out. Yes, Philip.
We've seen that the pH of this stuff is not neutral, that there's calcium oxides or hydroxides in there, where you have a pH of 8 or 9 or sometimes higher than that. And I think if you measured, you know, the pH inside that filter at the very beginning versus with time, you're going to see it's higher pH early on, and with time that's probably going to go towards neutrality or lower. My concern is if you're in the southeast or whatever, eastern United States, where you have typically full pH less than 7, and you don't have a carbonatic type soil, the calcium phosphate is not going to be geologically stable. We've seen a lot of these poultry farms in Arkansas when they put soil test phosphorus limitation on and they don't fertilize the chicken litter anymore, and they have to convert over to some kind of ammoniacal fertilizer. pH drops dramatically from, you know, near 7 to less than 5, and everybody says, well, you can lime your soils and get rid of that. Well, they don't. They don't lime their soils. And so those calcium phosphates are going to dissolve. And I just don't know if, to me, it's kind of scary using calcium in a system that's not carbonated to control phosphorus long term.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. The currently, I mean, liming is a common practice, and they do maintain some near neutral pHs. I guess if you stopped that, what you're talking about may occur.
Even at pH 7, calcium phosphate, if you do solubility studies, we've done those in the lab with minerals, they'll support a real high soluble phosphorus concentration at pH 7. So you know, over the long term, I'd be concerned about that.
But are you talking about in the soil? I mean,
yeah, in the soil.
Right. But I think that's why we're having such high soluble phosphate.
Or just pure mineral. We've got some Smithsonian minerals and just shake them in the lab at different pHs. And even at pH 7, they'll support a real high soluble phosphorus.
But
it's 7.5 or 8 before you really can have low soluble phosphorus and calcium.
But 3 years of the gypsum filter itself, we're still effectively removing phosphorus. I don't know how long it'll take. It could be. Well, okay, and then that's when we would excavate the ditch filter, get it out. We'd have to rebuild it with the gypsum curtain. I would just move over and put in another one.
I was just going to reiterate that the Ray's vision was really one kind of trying to maintain the integrity
of the gypsum itself as it starts to see its degradation of the footboard. And you're basically getting on the gypsum treadmill right now. Once you start with gypsum, you keep going with the curtain. You would add another curtain in 10 years' time right there.
Right.
And you use that to trap any.
You're trapping the previous curtain.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, when you do your economic analysis, you need to figure out how to dig that up and do something with it. You know, that's
not. Let's go here, Eben.
Just related to that, is it that you have so much calcium that equilibrium is shifted over that you are able to?
Yes. Yes. In fact, we've looked at trying to reduce soluble phosphorus within chicken litter. And calcium does a better job because it is a calcium system. If you try to control soluble phosphorus in a calcium-based chemistry of a chicken litter using iron or aluminum, I envision you kind of almost have to convert the whole chemistry over to aluminum iron-based chemistry in order to control soluble phosphorus. So it's much more effective to control it with a calcium by shifting the chemistry.
I've got patents on using calcium, you know, and using aluminum and to control the solubility of phosphorus in chicken litter, and I would never recommend calcium unless you were out west with high pH soil, because it's just not too chemically steady.
Well,
it's all
Josh has been trying to get a question in here.
I was just going to say, Phil asked the same question he made about 2 weeks ago.
Give him your answer.
So, the other thing is, though, I think the contention that it's dangerous is a little bit off base, because we're not putting any more phosphorus out than was already there. We're trapping phosphorus in the gypsum that's there to begin with. It is not going to release more than the equilibrium of the system will allow. So it's not like a time bomb that's going to drop phosphorus that wasn't there. That's phosphorus that was originally in the soil anyway. We haven't added phosphorus. So the contention is dangerous, I think. You're still better off today than you were yesterday, right? You still remove phosphorus from drainage. And the equilibrium of the system drives it. In the future, you haven't had any phosphorus going forward, right?
But they
it was there before, though. We didn't have it, right?
So
it's not dangerous.
If you quit managing it, perhaps you would slug it through. But I think we're moving into where these managed, engineered type systems is the only answer that's going to deal with the problem that we have now.
Could you please tell us how much phosphorus you captured in GE? You can tell it in 20 tons of gypsum in your first example for elimination. And I'm just curious if you know how much phosphorus ton. You retain so far, because it's quite interesting from the point of view of your second generation, if you like extrapolate and you know, see how to size the second generation.
Right.
Because when you say it's in 3 years, it's still working very efficiently, but if you have 120 tons, it should be efficient for like 50 years, not like 3 years.
No, I agree. But I think one of the points I was trying to make, the question kind of goes to what's the lifetime of the filter. If you think chemically, sorption isotherms, all those column leaching, as you mentioned, is the more appropriate way to determine how long it would last, you would get one answer in the laboratory. But the other answer is, you know, it's getting less permeable. I mean, the hydraulic conductivity is going down. So when you get in the field and you put it in place, that's far more important, I think, from a practical standpoint than the chemical life. But the chemical life, I expect, would be very long, as you say.
No, but I was also meaning, you know, because of clogging, it can also be tilting or clogging, and maybe it's better to have several filters in series, it's not 1 megawatt, it has 20 tons of filters.
Right.
It can be
Well, I think that's a long-range vision for the curtain. Is that you would, like I say, if you begin to lose effectiveness, move over and put another one next to it. Pete?
There's a lot of chemistry, and everybody focuses on basically, you know, issues of saturation.
Jump in there.
It seems to me with all these practices, including the ones where you're broadcasting it on the field, it's the bypass that Rich talked about earlier, including, and also that would apply to these gypsum filters too. But you have, you know, activity there. I mean, you've got, you know, woodchucks. You have, all kinds of things that are creating conduits to bypass the filter that could be potentially significant. And those are things that reinforce themselves with the flows
start to move into them. And so I'm just wondering what you think you can do to rejuvenate, you know, a system like that. What do you have to do to basically assess them from the standpoint of whether or not they're actually treating water? Is the water moving through, or is it bypassing?
Well, we're going to learn in the real environment, I think. Along these ditches, one thing that bothers me, I've seen the bank of the ditch begin to fail due to muskrat, activity, burrowing back into the ditch. Well, if they burrow back into my gypsum curtain, I'm a little concerned if I'm going to start seeing piping coming out and losing gypsum that way, which would imply that I'm going to have to do some kind of tillage of some kind to disrupt that bypass flow. So, but again, I think some of these things, you really have to take them to the field and those things come to light in practice. And, or maybe, you know, if a lot better management of the ditch itself to keep the muskrats out, don't provide a nice habitat for the muskrat.
That didn't work, right? There's so much toxic in there anyway, it'll kill everything.
All right, well, let's take a break. We've got about 5 minutes or so to take a break. Thank you.